Look at the size of that hole.
Poor thing.
Used to be I'd have 25, 30 visitors a day here.
Look at the size of that hole.
You get to be my age, you start to understand what living's all about.
Look at the size of that hole.
Mr. Slauson, can we go with you?
It's best you ladies stay put right here.
The party's over.
Oh, you are so pretty. It's a shame you have to die.
Look at the size of that hole.
You oughtn't to say things like that. I was trying to be nice.
Hi, this is Russell Todd from Chopping Mall, He Knows You're Alone in Friday the 13th Part 2, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, and this time we're off to look some big holes, aren't we, Eric? I bet that's something that's been said to you a few times on a Friday night down the bear pit.
I don't know what you mean. On a Friday night, I'd be sitting in doing my knitting and reading my Bible, yeah.
Yeah, if you believe that, you believe anything. But yes, we are back, and we're another listener pick. And who's the listener pick by, from, Eric?
Oh, Tristan Comer.
Comer, yes. So thank you, yep. Tristan. And it's Tourist Trap, 1979's Tourist Trap, which is going to be a fun one to talk about, I think. So. Thank you.
That's
Alan
my
Jones.
Impression of the mannequins in Tourist
yes.
Trap.
It's kind of you've got a very clear voice. Were you a choir boy when you were younger?
I actually was.
Were you? Yes. I can imagine that. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, what happened, Eric?
Well, it all went horribly wrong. I discovered that rock and roll. You know, like the bands like the Kajagoogoo and the Culture Club.
Are they rock and roll?
They are total rock and roll.
Okay. Well. Yes, we'll leave
the
that
Bucks
on there.
Fizz.
The Bucks Fizz.
They were another one who led me down the wrong path, yeah.
Yeah. It's not exactly Slayer, is it? Or anything. Or the Dead Kennedys.
Fine line. Mm.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you, Eric. But apart from that, you're okay.
Yeah.
Apart from your Bucks Fizz affliction.
Hey.
Joseph, how are you doing?
Oh, I've been better, but I'm here. Ever the consummate professional.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Even if I overslept a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we're glad to have you with us. Even and I say, Joseph, you're sounding even more manly than usual. So,
I have a major congestion going on here, but I'll be okay.
Okay. Well, we're pushing up the heterosexual quota by 5 points, I think. but on the other side of the coin, Nathan, how are you doing?
I've never been better.
Really? Well, that's good. Even though it's only about 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, but you know what? Do you know why he never feels better?
Why?
Do you not recall last week's episode or 2 weeks ago?
Yes. Well, the self-medication.
We found out the reason why Nathan is so happy at 6:00 in the morning.
Oh, it helps me.
Yes, but you don't. It's funny. You can tell because you sound clearer this time. Last time you did, it was like Mr. Stubbins. You were talking, talk about Mr. Stubbins all the way through the episode.
Oh, we're just out right now.
But okay, well, we're going to come on to Tourist Trap a little bit later, and because we are recording things a little bit out of whack, this is going out 2 weeks after we recorded it because we just put out our Deadly Friend episode today, which recorded 2 weeks ago. So it's all a bit thingy, but we're hoping to have content for you right up until Christmas. But we're also going to be going to tell you about our very special Christmas choice at the end of the show. But before we get on to that, should we talk about what we've watched recently? Joseph, do you want to talk a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I've just been watching. Well, actually, I've watched a lot this week. Of course, I've been watching Ash vs. Evil Dead. I haven't seen the most recent episode because of my sickness. I've been kind of stymied the last day or so, but I'm still enjoying that. I'm sure Eric's probably seen it by now.
I have, yes. I was telling Nathan that it's particularly pertinent to him.
Don't spoil the latest one. I'm going to watch that later today. I am excited to see that. Let's see what else. I watched a movie called Circle. It's basically 50 people wake up in this room. It's kind of, it looks like a weird, maybe a spaceship. I don't know, like an alien spaceship. Maybe they're standing on top of these little red circles, and there's this device in the room. Like every few minutes, it just randomly picks someone and kills them. And basically, they have to figure out why they're there. It's another one of those a certain amount of people trapped in a small room type films. It reminded me a little bit of Cube or something like that. Pretty good, actually. It's kind of interesting how they can take 50 people, and you know, it doesn't feel like there's too many characters. You actually get to know almost everyone. Decent acting. The last person standing is not who you'd expect it to be. Just overall, it was a blind Netflix watch. I would recommend it if you like those X number of people trapped in a room scenarios. Anyone else seen it?
No, but it sounds like Eric's usual Friday night, doesn't it? 50 people trapped in a room.
Yeah. That's right, Eric.
I told you I'm reading my Bible and doing my knitting.
Yeah, but you've still got those 50 bears trapped in the room around the back, haven't you?
Well, it's the best place for them.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, I've not seen that. I've not even heard of that, actually.
Yeah, it's decent. I mean, it's one stat. I mean, people standing in one, basically standing still for 90 minutes, but it actually manages to keep you interested and entertained. So I'd definitely recommend that. Well, let's see what else. Another blind Netflix watch was Come Back to Me from a few years ago. I'd never heard of it. Man and woman, they move into this house. Hang on a second. Let me check my notes because I'm still half asleep. I had notes on this.
Okay.
Sorry. That's what being sick does to you.
It's all right. We understand. We've all been there.
What did I say about
you're
this
usually,
one?
You're usually in this state every Saturday and Sunday morning, Justin, aren't you?
What?
Yeah. What with sick? Your hangovers and all that?
Well, actually, I did have... Well, no, anyway, I won't go into that.
Yeah, so. You did have a hangover this morning. Yeah, I knew it.
Okay, basically, this movie is about this man and this woman. she wants to have a baby. And... the guy, he's kind of on the fence about it, but he won't say why. But we later learn that he's sterile. But anyway, she ends up getting pregnant, and then he accuses her of cheating on him because he's sterile, so he couldn't he obviously couldn't have gotten her pregnant. And meanwhile, this kind of, I guess you'd call him a weirdo, moves across the street from them. And then, you know, every night she keeps like blacking out and then waking up and not remembering what's happening. And that's really all I can say about it without spoiling it too much. It kind of feels like a Lifetime movie in spurts. And there's like a pretty ludicrous twist at the halfway point that basically explains why all this weird stuff's happening. And so, you know, at this point, I wasn't with it, but I kept watching it anyway, because I'm kind of glad I did, because it has one of the best, I did not see that coming endings I've seen, you know, in pretty much any movie. If you can get past kind of the melodramatic acting and kind of the slow half pace, you're really rewarded with a really clever kind of a gut punch ending that, you know, I liked a lot. So I guess it's kind of a recommendation. I'm on the fence with it, but I guess I'm leaning more towards a thumbs up than a thumbs down.
Cool. Okay. Well, that sounds good. It also, again, sounds like one of Eric's nights out of spurts and people waking up not knowing what happened the night before.
Sounds more like your parties.
You've not been to any of my parties, Eric.
No, I'm not going to because I don't dress up as a woman.
Are you sure?
Apparently I wouldn't be welcomed. I am sure.
Eric, I dressed up once or twice as a woman for New Year's Eve. It's hardly a lifestyle.
New Year's Eve is like one of those holidays where you dress up.
Exactly.
No, it's not.
I've never dressed up.
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, see, Justin. Ha. Huh.
I can do what I want. I can live my life how I want.
So didn't they dress up?
You are a female.
At least I'm not wearing...
Didn't they dress up for New Year's Eve on Terror Train?
They did, but that was different.
Exactly. That's what I'm recreating. It's not. Well, at least I'm not dressed wearing crotchless leather chaps like you do, Eric.
How did you see those pictures?
Everywhere. You wear them to the office.
True.
So I hear. Yeah. So anyway, Joseph, thank you. Is there anything else?
Yeah, just one more. Yeah. I watched another Netflix blind watch was Last Shift, which it's basically about this rookie police officer. She's staying the night in this abandoned police station before they're basically tearing it down. And on the last night, there's some like hazardous material that someone's supposed to come pick up. So she's been assigned to sit there and wait on them. And basically, this was the site of some kind of satanic ritual killing a while back. And, you know, she starts, I guess you'd say, seeing things. And then, you know, the fit hits the shan, as it were. I really like this one. But I had some problems with it. For one, it's like it kind of captures that whole sound and mood tension, kind of like Session 9 did a while back. So, you know, I definitely recommend it on that. Has some really good visuals, lots of good practical effects. My problem is that the lead character and by proxy anyone else in the film just don't act like human beings whatsoever. And I know it, you know, it's kind of a supernatural type film. You have to make allowances, but I don't know, stupid decisions are stupid decisions. And I had a hard time getting past some of the boneheaded moves of the script in this. So it's a recommendation for sure with reservations. See it for the really good effects, the really good sound design and the kind of the mood of the like Session 9-esque mood. But otherwise, you know, be prepared to yell at the screen like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Definitely low on the totem pole as far as story goes. But, you know, otherwise, I'd recommend it.
I've seen that. I watched that this week. Has anyone else seen it? Nathan? Eric?
No.
What was it called again?
The Last Shift or Last Shift.
No. Oh, no. Definitely not.
But that was one I was going to talk about, so I mean, I might as well talk about it here. But I really liked it. I thought it was really good. It was just shy of being excellent, I thought. But I agree with Joseph that there were some limitations, and some of those were the poor character decisions. And also, what I really liked about it was it actually managed to be really creepy, but also... It showed quite a lot as well, because something like Session 9 doesn't show a lot at all, and that's very effective. But quite often, if you get something like, what was that one with the Grave Encounters, where it starts off quite creepy and then goes completely over the top and loses any sense of horror or creepiness because it just becomes a kind of fairground ride.
That's what this does, but at the same time, it doesn't really hit that over-the-top mark because the visuals are really good.
Exactly.
And the sound design's really good. I just had a problem with why did character make X choice instead of Y choice, and why are you just standing there, you know, you're a police officer, et cetera, et cetera. But other than that, it's actually really effective.
Yeah, no, exactly. That was the point I was going to make. It was that it stops going shy just of that kind of going into silliness. It shows enough that it's not completely kind of subtle. It goes over the top, but does it in such a way it never goes completely over the top and becomes comical. So I really liked it. I thought it was really good, and they say it's just shy of being excellent. So I definitely recommend. I think it's worth checking out, and say that's on Netflix at the moment.
Yeah.
So okay. Well, thanks, Joseph. Anything else?
No, that's it for this week.
Okay. I'm sorry. I've got Argento on my lap at the moment. He's got a big bushy tail, and he's eyeing up my laptop. And he keeps on. He's got this thing at the moment where
you get a big bushy pussy.
But he loves going to walking over the laptop and turning. So if we're watching something and putting it through the TV, he'll go and stand on the laptop and do something random, or do that kind of moonwalking thing that cats do on the kind of smooth surfaces. So anyway,
your cat moonwalks. Wow,
it does. Yeah. On that bombshell, Eric, what have you been watching?
Okay, well, a colleague of mine at work has some connections with 20th Century Fox, and she found herself in possession of the Blu-ray of the Poltergeist remake, and she didn't want to watch it because she doesn't like horror, so she offered it to me, and I said, yeah, fair enough. I mean, I saw this in the cinemas and thought it was mediocre at best. Rewatching it again on Blu-ray, I thought it was awful, not because it's a bad movie, but because it's so incredibly bland. It's really paint by numbers. It's got Richard Harris's son in it doing the world's worst Irish accents. I was probably more forgiving in the cinema because it was in 3D and some of the effects were quite effective, but this Blu-ray viewing really showed up its flaws, and its flaws are that it's just incredibly boring. And the Blu-ray, you know, advertises itself as having an extended extreme version of the film, which means an extra 7 minutes of, you know, family interaction. There's absolutely no new extreme footage. But I mean, I'm savvy enough not to be fooled by you know, major studio releases that boast an extreme extended version of a film. I know that it's going to be pretty tame. And the only extra on the Blu-ray is an alternate ending, which is pants. So, yeah, I would definitely avoid the Poltergeist remake. I was kind of kinder to it, as I said, when I saw it in the cinema, but rewatching it, awful, absolutely dreadfully boring. The other thing, only other thing I've watched in the horror vein, because I'm not a great TV watcher, but I've found American Horror Story on Netflix, and I started watching season one. So I'm 10 episodes into its 12-episode season, and I'm finding it kind of hit and miss, probably more miss, I'd say, than hit. I'm persevering to see how it ends. I'm not sure I'll be watching any further seasons, though, because it's a big time commitment for something I'm not too pushed about. The problem with this season is that there's no characters that have both feet firmly in reality. There's no one to relate to in it, really. I mean, people don't seem to react realistically to this ghostly mayhem that's going on around them, and you know, it makes me think that the resolution of the plot is going in one direction only, which I you know, it would be a first for me to guess the ending of a TV series like this, but I think I have, possibly. But I'll wait and see. I'll watch the final two episodes later today. So each episode feels quite cold and detached, and you know, someone will encounter some violent ghostly apparition and they'll just brush it off. You know, they're like, ooh, a ghost, oh, I'm so scared, oh, where's my earrings? That type of thing. You know, and it just gets a bit boring after a while. If you're going to do that for, you know, 7 or 8 hours of a TV series, it just, I don't know, I just found it a bit tedious, you know. But I will, as I said, I'm persevering to the end of the season. I mean, you know, I'm intrigued. It must be doing something right, because I'm intrigued to see how they wrap it up. But as I said, I don't know if I'll persevere with another season of it, because apparently this first one is supposed to be the best of the lot, and it's not doing a huge amount for me.
Okay, I watched the first season. I didn't watch any of the others, but I know you watched them, Nathan, don't you?
Yeah, I've seen them all.
And how do you rate them?
I love all of them. I like the first season, but I don't know what it is, but the first season to me is not rewatchable. Like, I don't think I could ever rewatch it. I feel like a one-time watch was enough, but like the second season is just so crazy and outlandish. Like, I could probably rewatch it because it's just so over the top to me. And the third season, you know, kind of the same way with the second season. I could rewatch the third as well, just because, you know, I don't know. I like them. You guys already know this, but I like the more campy, over the top stuff. So I'm liking that. This current season is, I mean, you want to talk about a season where there's no character with their feet in reality. This current season is exactly like that. I mean, there is, like, all the characters are just weird and odd. Like, there's nobody in there that's kind of, I guess, the quote-unquote straight man.
Yeah. Justin, you must like it because, like, it must remind you of your college days with just a bunch of weird people.
Very funny.
With no relation to reality, yeah.
Well, of course, I'm still waiting for Toya to show up on the soundtrack. Obviously, Susie has.
Has Susie been on the American Horror Story soundtrack? Maybe that's why I find it so shit.
Eric! That's outrageous. And Hannibal, as we know. So I'm still waiting for... Do they do an American Cash in the Attic?
I don't think so.
Well, I'm sure they do, and I'm sure Troy has been on it. It's there.
Yes. Okay, anyway, we don't want to go into, you know, open old wounds, do we, Eric? Again, it's not
You seem to be very enthusiastic about doing it.
Eric, please, let's not fall out.
Yeah, we have already.
Pardon?
We have already fallen out.
Oh, right, okay. Well, let's just move on. Let's move over your crack.
And, I wish 1,000 Poltergeist remakes onto your television screen.
Oh, Eric,
I curse your television screen with 1,000 Poltergeist remakes.
Oh, Eric, that's awful. Yeah, well, so what I'm going to do now is insert...
No, Justin, it's okay, it's okay. I bless your TV with 1,000 crazy Fat Ethel 2s.
Oh, my God.
That's a blessing.
It's a blessing and a curse all rolled into one.
Mm.
So...
I think after 112 episodes, I finally know who Eric reminds me of.
Who?
You remind George me of King. Eric. You're the Eric Cartman of the podcast.
Hey, that's not nice.
What, from South Park?
Yes, because he bully people and then you play the innocent game.
I think we all know that is true.
It's so not true.
It so is true.
Yes. Oh, Eric.
So unfair. What's Nathan been watching recently?
Yes, Nathan. What? What have you been watching recently? What have you watched recently, Nathan?
Oh, what have I watched recently? Oh, okay. I watched The Lumberjack Man, and it's a thrilling, scary film. No, he wasn't nice. It's a thrilling, scary film about a killer.
Oh, it's a film. I thought you were just looking out your window. Sorry.
Oh. And you wouldn't like this killer, Eric, because he's the lumberjack man, but he looks like a tree. He don't look like a human. He's like a tree killer.
Oh, it sounds like Troll 2.
And he goes after all these kids at this Christian Bible camp. So he starts killing them, hacking them up. And... I think, like, this movie, it's one of those movies when you watch it, you could kind of tell that everybody working on it had, like, a great time, and it's kind of watchable for that, but then also, I can't fully recommend it because, in another way, it's just, I don't know, it feels like it's just so slapped together. Like, it feels like a lot of random scenes and then a killing. And then a bunch of randomness and then a killing, which should be something that I would love. But for some reason, this one just didn't quite click with me like it should have. But, I mean, it's still decent. I would probably give it like a 3 out of 5. You know, I mean, it's slightly above average for me, but not more than that.
I'm just looking at it on IMDb, Nate, and it says it's 105 minutes. Is that right?
That was another problem, is that it's too long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This should not have been Michael more than Madsen. 80 minutes. Michael starring. Madsen. Yeah, he's in it for all of like... He's not in it as much as you would expect from a starring role.
Mm.
When was it made?
It's recent. This year.
It's credited as 2015, yeah.
Okay.
There's a really good scene in it where the lumberjack man busts into the cafeteria where they're all eating, and one of the girls stands up on the at the end of the table, and you know, she says something, and he throws a hatchet, and they show the hatchet spinning in slow motion while it's showing all the kids' faces as it's going past them, and then it slams into her head at the end of the table. That's a great scene. Cool.
Right. Okay. Well, that's one to either watch or not, but a semi-recommend.
I think not.
Nathan. Probably not. No. Anything else, Nathan?
I'm thinking that's it because there was one other, but then I realized I talked about it on the last show.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I apart from Last Shift, the only other film I watched also on Netflix was, and I can't remember its title, but it's the one that you've seen, Joseph. The one about the couples. They're having a dinner party, and there's an asteroid. Was it called Coherence or?
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
What was that called?
It's called Coherence, I think. Yeah,
it's called Coherence. Okay, yeah. I quite liked it. I thought it was really well done, and it was obviously very, very low budget, but it kind of worked in a you know. And I've liked that whole alternative realities, and you know, it was, yeah, I thought it was good. But we've spoken about it quite a lot on previous shows.
I don't really remember seeing that. Did I mention it at one point?
I thought so.
I mentioned at one point, I know.
Or maybe it was Eric that talked about. But it's the, do you remember the premise is that there's an asteroid going over, and there's a dinner party, and they basically, all the lights go out, and there's one other house nearby that's got the lights on, so they go over. And there's a mirror image of them in the house.
So, oh, yeah. So, I think I've seen this. It has Nicholas Brendon from Buffy the Vampire Slayer in it.
That's right, yeah.
And it reminded me of Plus One, but I really don't remember anything else about this film. I'm just looking it up on the IMDb. I remember the, you know, who was in it and the plot, but...
I remember getting kind of, in the last 10, 15 minutes, getting quite lost with the plot mechanics.
I don't remember anything else about it, so maybe I should watch it again.
Yeah, I think so. But cool. Okay, well.
Oh, can I just say one other thing? Are you guys aware of this YouTube channel called Audiobooks for the Damned?
No.
It's basically old 70s and 80s movie novelizations that are done in audiobook form just by amateurs. Well, okay. You know, in the nicest possible way. They're unauthorized, basically, is what I mean. But, I mean, you can listen to the Halloween 2 novelization if you have 5 hours, 37 minutes, and 40 seconds to spare. Okay. And they've got loads of other things up there, like the Squirm novelization. You can listen to Poltergeist 1 and 2, The Thing, Scanners, Mad Max, lots of different things, lots of cult movies they've done audiobooks for. So, I mean, they can go for ridiculous prices on eBay, so if you wanted an audiobook version. Now, they are quite lengthy. I mean, the Poltergeist one's over 8 hours long, so you do need, you know, time on your side. So, but I just thought worth mentioning, because it's this fun little thing I found on YouTube.
Okay, right. Well, it's good you're looking up that kind of stuff rather than the normal kind of things, Eric. What? So thank you for sharing that with us.
What other things would I be looking up on YouTube?
Anyway, and let's move on. And here is the trailer for this week's choice of Tourist Trap.
Every year, hundreds of young people travel the country and disappear. God help those who get caught in the tourist trap. Tourist Trap, where beautiful young people looking for excitement are tricked, terrorized, trapped. See. Terror you can feel. Heart-stopping suspense that makes this the nightmare that never ends. Tourist Trap.
Hello, Nathan.
Oh, good Lord. I didn't know the trailer was over, because it didn't sound like the ending to a trailer to me. Okay, my bad. Before I get started, I want to say that spoilers alert, there's going to be plenty of spoilers as per usual. And even in this description that I'm going to complain about, a group of young friends stranded at a secluded roadside museum are stalked by the owner of the place, who has the power to control his collection of mannequins. And what bothers me about this description on the IMDb is that it's so short, but it basically gives away the ending. in a way. I mean, I guess it's not that shocking who turns out to be the killer for anybody that's seen any horror film. But still, I don't like to, you know, like little reviews like that that kind of ruin it. But, you know, as far as Tourist Trap goes, I'm a huge fan. I mean, when I saw the artwork as a kid, I think that's what drew me in. Because, I mean, you guys know the classic artwork with Eileen's face, basically, in mannequin form. And my favorite part was the camera, holding the camera and the frightened girl inside the camera lens. I love that part. And in the movie, I thought it was really, really good. But I think this movie is one of those films that I think has a ton of atmosphere. It's overloaded with atmosphere. There's, you know, the creepy house, the kind of creepy little museum, you know, the woods. I mean, all the mannequins are very freaky. I actually have it on my television right now. And, I mean, the way their eyes follow people when they walk into a room, I think is very freaky. But, no, I mean, I'm a huge fan, even though I do, you know, have some questions. I don't think everything in the movie is fully explained. But, I mean, that's probably a good thing, because it leaves something up to, you know, your imagination. I liked the...
You whore!
Where did that
come from?
Yeah. That was Argento. That was Argento just did that. No, I'm like... shitting you not. I'm shitting you not.
Argento, that's a very horrible thing to say to Nathan.
he just got up on the keyboard and pressed that button. I'm shitting you not. That was the cat.
I do apologize for that.
Sorry.
It's okay. The scene with Tanya Roberts is getting... you know, like all the mannequins are kind of hovering over her when she's laying on the floor. I think that's a really weird scene. And all the mannequins, I mean, especially the beginning scene with Woody going into the, I guess, little gas station area. And that little mannequin whose head is in the floor and its mouth opens like really wide. It's kind of scary. That thing kind of freaks me out a little bit. I think there's a lot of stuff in this movie that does, actually. It gets under my skin, which is probably a good thing. I have some questions I want to ask you guys about it, but I'll wait till after you give your thoughts. Eric?
Okay, well, I think I'm going to be the sole person on this podcast who doesn't love this film 100%. I mean, I do like it, but from my perspective, it throws up the same issues that I have with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, you know, I think Tourist Trap opens really, really well, and I'm fully on board with it for about the first 45 minutes or so. But then it, you know, once the killer is revealed and he starts engaging with his victims, you know, it removes any eeriness or tension from the film for me. Sorry, I much prefer, like, the traditional slasher formula of, you know, teens being oblivious to the danger until sort of 15 minutes from the end. And I like the killer to be silent and mysterious and enigmatic. And, you know, when he's masked in Tourist Trap, he is all those things and he's quite eerie. But as soon as he's unmasked, I kind of lose interest. I mean, I have the same issue with something like Toolbox Murders, which I think has a good opening 20 minutes and then falls into, you know, sort of a tedious madman type plot. You know, so I get kind of bored by the villain. You know, there's nothing wrong with Chuck Connors' performance, but I just, whenever he's on screen, I lose interest. I'm much more interested in the supernatural angle, the mannequins that come to life, that type of thing. You know, and early on, especially in that sequence you were mentioning where Woody goes to the gas station at the start, it reminded me very much of Superstition. So, you know, and mannequins are just inherently eerie anyway, and they've been used to great effect in many a horror film, and they are indeed in the same way here. And indeed, they can be used for comedies as well, starring Kim Cattrall and Andrew McCarthy, if you like. The score by Pino D'Angelo, it was used...
Or William Ragsdale and Christy Swanson.
Oh, in Mannequin 2 on the Move.
Yeah.
Yeah. The score by Pino D'Angelo, I think, is quite hit and miss. Whoever compiled the intro, I think it was you, Joseph, I mean, you used that riff that plays, I think it plays in the opening credits, and it reminds me of the music used for the comedy Cops in Halloween 5, and that's not a compliment. I think it's completely inappropriate music at times. You know, the soup eating scene is a good example of this. They use that music, and you know, it's a very surreal scene. But the score, the way it's scored, is really odd, and it makes it sound like it's supposed to be from a Tom and Jerry cartoon rather than a horror film. I do think it picks up though in the last 10 minutes. Can I do a spoiler here?
Yes.
You're going to discuss this later, I know, Nathan. But when it's revealed that Jerry has been made into a mannequin, or whatever the meaning of the scene is, I think that's really effective. And you know, in the final shot of Molly driving in the Jeep filled with her mannequinized friends in the passenger seats, I thought was really inspired. So it's really only that sort of that middle half hour of the film where I kind of tend to zone out, and it sort of plateaus off, and I begin to sort of lose interest. But I can see why people rate it so highly, because it does have a really good opening and a really good sort of conclusion to the film. So you know, I'm not a total naysayer. I do like the film, but it's flawed in my opinion.
Fair enough, Justin.
Yeah, I'm quite a big fan of this movie because it's unlike any other slasher movie. Made at around the same time. It's kooky, I kind of guess, is kind of a good way to describe it, and creepy. I mean, mannequins are always quite creepy, but with this, it's kind of this film has a genuinely nightmarish feel, which is missing from a lot of early 80s slashers, which are far more not workaday. I mean, I enjoy them, but I can see when Eric was talking about Superstition, I can see the kind of comparison there with that, because not many slasher films at this time were playing with supernatural elements. No, I mean, the vast majority of them weren't. I mean, there were some notable exceptions like Superstition, Bloodbeat, The Boogeyman, and other films like that. But this goes way beyond the kind of the craziness of a lot of those films. And it kind of reminds me of kind of Jean Cocteau, those kind of some of those.
Ooh la la.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of Jean Cocteau. Ooh, I'm an art student.
Eric, but it does. And I've wrote about it in my review. Rally.
Oh, the one where you said the mannequins were rally spooky.
Yeah. What's a typo between friends? Anyway, Eric. But yeah, I really like it. I think the some of the acting's a bit kind of all over the place. Chuck Connors is really is really good as the killer. I mean, it does play with that whole mystery thing of, like, all the way through you think it's either his wife or his brother, and then as spoiler alert, you find out that he killed his wife and his brother, who were having an affair, which essentially drove him crazy, I kind of guess. I mean, it's a real mishmash of kind of it's almost like somebody's thrown Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Psycho, and The House of Wax and Vincent Price into a blender.
And Jean Cocteau.
And Jean Cocteau, of course, yes. I really like it. I mean, that opening scene is genuinely suspenseful, and it's quite scary. And there's the mannequins; they are really, really creepy. I mean, where it kind of falls down a bit is that obviously they didn't have enough budget to maybe be successful in some of their aims, because there's some kind of relatively laughable scenes where they go, my goodness, this, look how realistic they are, and it's just shop dummies that you would see in any sort of 70s kind of clothing store, and then they go to touch the shop dummy and say, my God, it feels like flesh. Even though it's just a shop dummy, and so things like that. I think if they'd had a little bit more budget, they could have improved on those things a bit. Having said that, it's amazing what they do on that very low budget. I also love the last shot of the final girl driving away in the van with all the dummies of her friends, dead friends there. I thought that was really good. And Tanya Roberts, if anyone could turn me, then I think Tanya Roberts possibly could in that skimpy 70s outfit. What? Well, I think
wow.
She's...
Wow, what a revelation.
But, I'd like it. It's kind of like a weird, nightmarish fairy tale. And I think it sort of stands... It has its own place in the slasher canon, which and I know it's got a lot of admirers, and I'd kind of count myself amongst them, I guess.
Joseph?
You'll be shocked to hear that I actually kind of side with Eric on this.
Yay!
I really do like this movie a lot, but like Eric was saying, it has a few little problems that I just, it's hard for me to get past. One, I do agree with him. Once you know for certain who the killer is, although it is pretty obvious either way, it kind of loses some of its steam. I like mystery until, you know, the last 15 seconds. I don't really want to spend too much time, you know, learning about a killer. I mean, in some films it works, and I guess in a way it works here, but I don't know. It got a little too talky for me. I much prefer the stuff with the mannequins, and certainly that scene where one person's being, you know, plastered up like a mannequin. That stuff's just very harrowing and, you know, indicative of what true horror is. Some really good atmosphere here. The direction is just stellar. Great cinematography. I do have a problem, and this is kind of strange considering. I typically love Pino Donaggio. His score here is just really out of place. Like Eric said, it's so upbeat. It sounds almost goofy. A film about sinister mannequins and telekinesis, it just doesn't really fit. You know, in some films you can contrast like a weird score with a dark visual and it works, but here I didn't think it, you know, worked too well. I was definitely hoping for more of a moodier score from Pino than, you know, what we got. It's kind of weird because this is a film, you know, I've seen several times before, and I never really, you know, picked up on these little annoyances until I watched it this week. You know, that's not to say it's not a good movie. I mean, it really is. I mean, Chuck Connors is really good as, spoiler alert, Davey, Mr. Slauson, or whoever you want to call him. I love the mask he uses when he's masked up. He's just very creepy. The power to control all these mannequins. It's just really, you know, ethereal and out of this world. I love how, you know, basically Tourist Trap takes this kind of, you know, faux reality of people getting broken down at some tourist trap and just kind of takes it to like a different universe. It gets a lot of points for there, but I'm going to give it, you know, a recommendation, but I'm a little miffed at some of the minor choices, like Eric pointed out, like certainly the music and unmasking the killer. And I don't know. It takes a couple of detours when, you know, it should have just, I guess, stayed in one place for more often. So a marginal recommendation. I'm sure I got more to say about it, but, I'll just kind of pass it back and forth for now.
I like the music, but the only piece that I didn't like was the main theme. Other than that, I do like the score, but I just don't like that main theme. That almost, it sounds like, I don't know, like a toy commercial or something.
Yeah. Normally that would work. And like, say, I think we picked up maybe on Don't Go in the Woods. I mean, this is kind of a weird, that's a weird film to kind of, you know, compare it to, but you know how in Don't Go in the Woods, you get this, basically what this madman in the woods killing people, but they have that kind of that strange, his rituals where the teddy bear picnic was playing over the dark, kind of downbeat stuff in the trailer, how that kind of works, where it the contrast works, but here it just doesn't really work that well.
Yeah, I mean, I could kind of see what you're saying. And one thing I wanted to bring up, which I brought up before the show, was the scene where Jerry's a mannequin. Now, that scene confuses me because I'm like, I don't understand if Jerry just doesn't realize he's already been a mannequin, or if that whole scene is just a mess with Molly and that he's just using a mannequin Jerry to look real to trick her when Jerry's been dead this whole time. So what do you guys think about that scene? What's your interpretation?
I thought he was just trying to trick, what's her name?
Yeah.
I always read it as Jerry was unaware he was being turned into a mannequin, and then I also thought that was creepier. So. Mm.
I don't think it's... I think there's a lot of things left unanswered in the film, isn't there? Because there's the whole supernatural, the telekinesis and all that kind of stuff going on is not really explained, is it? There's no reason for him to be able to do these things. And also, why would he turn Jerry into a perfect lifelike mannequin when he turns the others into, like, shop-bought dummies? Mm. Wouldn't make any sense, yeah. Is it? It's almost like a nightmare. It's kind of nightmarish logic, isn't it? That whole thing, which I think is it for me. The film plays better as a kind of a nightmare, so almost like a pre-Freddy style thing, where
or like a Jean Cocteau movie.
Or
like
did Jean anyone? Did anyone think James Wan's Dead Silence kind of owes a lot to this film?
Mm. Yeah, I think so. Very possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like the House of Wax remake owes a lot to Forrest Trap.
Yeah, it does, definitely.
I think... Eric, I was going to say that I think I can see a lot of Salvador Dali in this as well.
Can you? Do you think that the themes of the film are quite nihilistic in a postmodern, cathartic sense, and the overt neo-realism notwithstanding?
I'm not sure about the neo-realism, Eric. I would think post-realism, I would imagine.
Really?
I just need to get... Argento, could you come here for a second? Yeah, it's up. Here we go.
You whore!
So, it's amazing you can do that.
Well done,
Argento. Yeah. So... Okay.
But no, I was thinking the scene where Jerry is turned into a mannequin reminded me of the similar scene in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, where Stacey Nelkin, spoiler alert, gets turned into a robot at some stage during the proceedings. Now, I don't know if it was influenced at all by Tourist Trap, but they are quite similar scenes.
I mean, Tourist Trap, I mean, we'll get onto backgrounds in a minute, but it wasn't a very successful film, was it, apparently? It didn't get seen very much on its first release, and it kind of found an audience later on video.
Apparently the executive producer hated the score for the film.
Yeah.
And it was compared to, I guess, because Halloween was released at the same time. So I wonder, what Tourist Trap would be like with the score to Halloween.
Mm. More effective, I'd say.
Because I was just watching the scene where Molly was walking down the steps to go into the house. And I was like, what if that – I was, like, picturing the Halloween music to that scene. And I was like, I think that would fit.
I think the trouble is with Halloween, it's got like the supernatural potentially. Well, the whole thing is the Halloween and, you know, Samhain and all that kind of thing going on. But it's much more subtle, isn't it? Whereas this kind of lurches from horror to kind of almost parody to dark comedy to, you know, it's all over the place tonally, isn't it?
Well, and I think that's that kind of goes along with what you said about the feel of this movie. It's almost like watching somebody's nightmare because it's just all over the place as far as tone goes, which I don't think that's a bad thing. I like the nightmarish kind of films.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's why I think it's part of the charm. I think if it had just been a run-of-the-mill kids turn up at abandoned gas station and get chased down by a killer in a mask, it would have been great. But it would it wouldn't have been Tourist Trap.
Because it reminded me in places of it was in the setup of The Unseen, which is a much less entertaining film.
Yeah,
because there is no weirdness or supernatural element or, you know, wackiness going on. It's a bit run of the mill. Whereas Tourist Trap has, you know, a lot going on. I mean, I have my criticisms of it, but you know, the opening 45 minutes, I do think is very strong.
Yeah,
and I like the noise that the mannequins make.
Yeah,
yes,
like little angels.
It's just a shame. It's a shame Woody didn't stick around a little bit longer. That's all I'm saying.
I actually kind of agree with you, to be honest.
Yes. He was a bit easier on the eye than the other guy.
Not I just the other wanna, guy was
again, I just want to know who I want to know who came up with a bright idea of naming a character Woody in a film about mannequins.
But he's quite
and
a good actor.
The first of the five friends to turn into one.
Yeah.
It's a very hot.
Another horror movie comes along with absolutely no eye candy in it.
Well, that's debatable. That's debatable, Eric.
Eric, you don't like Chuck Connors?
No.
He's very masculine, very, very, you
I don't
know.
Care. He's not attractive.
Very burly and butch.
No.
But he doesn't look like Father Christmas.
No, well, yeah, that's his first problem, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I love the way when they're standing, when Mr. Slauson goes back into the museum and Molly's outside with the shotgun, the way she's holding that shotgun, like if she like even pulled that trigger, she would be like laying on the ground. But I guess that's important because I don't think a character like Molly would ever probably use a shotgun, so she probably doesn't even know how to hold it.
Yeah.
No, she looks like Mrs. Prim, doesn't she?
Yes, with her all white outfit.
But that was her kind hat. That was almost like the trope, wasn't it? Final girl, isn't it? She was the perfect
virgin
white.
Discharge.
Yes. No. She was basically the Jamie Lee character, Jamie Curtis character. Although, someone taking off.
Yes, yeah, that was loud. Whatever that was.
Yeah. Oh, no. Although, just a little bit of background, just if we're getting into that, was that this film was made before Halloween or at the same time as Halloween. So, although I previously thought that it kind of maybe ripped off parts of Halloween, it was in fact completely coincidental. In fact, it was far more influenced by Texas Chainsaw Massacre, wasn't it? And
yes.
Psycho and Jean Cocteau. Eric.
Yes, obviously.
There you go.
So it was produced by Erwin Jablans and Compass International Films, who also did Halloween. So
yes,
surely it can't be a coincidence, the similarities, any similarities.
But it completed. It was shot in May 1978. So,
oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't Halloween started filming in March of 78, didn't it?
Yes, but it'd be a bit of a stretch, wouldn't it? That he was Dave Shimola would have seen a rough cut of Halloween,
yeah.
Because that didn't get.
He probably had seen La Belle et la Bête by Jean Cocteau, though.
Oh, I'd imagine so. Yes,
probably,
definitely.
Probably has.
Well, he went to film school, didn't he? This is based on his one of his shorts. Have you ever had a film made based on one of your shorts, Eric?
My shorts that I wear in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did actually.
Okay, well, we'll have to watch that at some point. But
yeah, it's won some Oscars.
I bet it did. Do we want to talk a bit about background?
No.
I have a little bit.
I've got a lot.
Oh.
Are you surprised?
Gosh, okay. Who goes first? Nathan, I think you should go first because you've got a lot.
Okay. It was shot in 24 days. Uh-huh. John Van Ness, who plays Jerry, we obviously also know him from Hospital Massacre, a.k.a. X-Ray.
Yeah.
He did his own stunt when he jumped through that window, so props to him for that.
You can tell it's him, can't you? Because quite often it looks like it's like a burly bodybuilder dressed in a wig and a dress, like in Friday 13th Part 4 when that woman gets thrown through the window.
Yeah.
But you can definitely tell it's him. Yeah.
And as we kind of talked about earlier, Erwin Jablans, is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's how they always pronounce his name in the documentaries, yeah. Okay. I would say Jablans, but no, Jablans.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, he hated the score, absolutely hated it. And the way that the director, David Schmoller, got introduced to Pino DiNaggio was through.
Sorry,
I'm awful with all these names.
I was thinking that sentence in my head. Sorry.
I think I've got all I want from you, madam. Thank you.
You think so?
Well, perhaps there are a couple of points I'd like to go over with you later.
I've had one of those for a while. Sorry. Carry on.
So anyway, he met him through Joe Dante during the making of Piranha. Because Joe Dante did not speak Italian, so he needed a translator. Or I think it was Spanish, actually. And David did, so that's how he met up with the composer. And he got $50,000 for that score. So it's a pretty good payday.
Yeah. Like a shite that it is.
Robert A. Burns, who did some special effects for this, also did art direction for Reanimator, Blood Song, Microwave Massacre, The Hills Have Eyes, and the best movie ever made, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So yeah, this movie does have a connection to TCM. Jocelyn Jones, who plays Molly, she teaches acting today. So she has become a teacher. I think she's still involved in the industry aside from teaching as well, though. The plaster used in the death scene was actually dough, which it does look like dough to me because I'm
it looks like something
I'm very
else to me.
Really?
Eric.
What does it look like?
Eric, are you all right?
I think Eric like turned into a mannequin.
I think
it looks
having
like
a breakdown.
Bold.
Something
Eric.
Old. I don't get it.
Something naughty.
Eric has turned into a mannequin.
A laughing gnome.
The producer, Charles Band, who I'm sure all you guys know who that is, he is actually the one that came up with the idea of the killer having telekinesis. And the director wasn't exactly too thrilled about that aspect. I think he didn't really want to go that route, but that's what ended up happening. And as shocking as it is, this movie is rated PG, which, I mean, I don't really see this movie with a PG rating. Do you guys?
No, I find that really surprising.
And again now?
1, 2, 3, yeah.
Okay, and there was an interesting acting dynamic between Chuck Connors and Jocelyn Jones. She was more of a skilled, trained actress where she would want to do all these breathing exercises.
Cop so on to yourself.
Sorry.
That was okay.
Jumped on the
my
keyboard
dog was
and paused it.
Slurping water.
He paused it with his paws.
Yes. Sorry, Nathan. Could you just do that last bit again? I'll keep
I will,
off.
But I can only do it one more time.
Okay.
Yeah. She's not performing monkey, Justin.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
Here we go.
And there was an interesting acting dynamic between Chuck Connors and Jocelyn Jones. She was more of the highly trained actress where she would want to do a lot of breathing exercises and things like that before a scene, which he just found to be ludicrous. And he couldn't understand why she was doing it. I read an interview with Robin Sherwood, who played Eileen, that she actually wound up in the hospital during the breaking mirror scene. There was somebody standing on the other side of that mirror with a hammer, and they were going to smash it. And she was warned by Chuck Connors, like, when it smashes, to look away quickly. And it was probably a good thing she did, because she actually did end up having to go to the hospital because she had little bits and shards of glass, like, that she had to get removed. So, yeah, that's some guerrilla filmmaking.
Absolutely.
And the last thing I have is that during the swimming scene, that water was absolutely freezing. But Robin Sherwood's husband told her that it was going to be that way, and they had a bodysuit for her to wear under her clothes so she wouldn't be that cold in the water. But the other two didn't really think to do that, so she said that they were actually very, very cold. But she was comfortable. So they'll always be prepared. It'll
absolutely
help.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nathan.
You're welcome.
Joseph, have you got anything left after that?
Not much. Stephen King praised the film in his book, Dance Macabre, especially its frightful opening scene. like you said, in an interview at terrortrap.com, David Schmoller said that the film probably would have been more commercially successful if it had that R rating. That's what you said, Justin. It was Connor's idea to distinguish between Mr. Slauson and Plasterface, is what they called the mannequin get-up with the mask on, by having Slauson walk with a limp. The mannequin who gives the female lead something to drink is actually David Schmoller's wife, or then wife. The mannequin originally had two lines, but Schmoller had them edited out during post-production, and apparently she never forgave him for that. Let's see, what else? Chuck Connors was not the original choice to play Mr. Slauson. Director David Schmoller really wanted to go with Alan Dale from Neighbors.
Are you sure about
that? No, I'm just kidding. I just had to throw in an Alan Dale reference. Let's see, what else? Shot in 24 days. Pino Donaggio's fee for composing the score was 1/6 of the movie's budget. And like I said, though the masked killer was called Davey, the production crew since dubbed him Plasterface. Tourist Trap was actually based on David Schmoller's senior film project at film school. That's according to Schmoller's commentary on the 20th anniversary DVD.
It's called The Spider Will Kill You.
Okay.
And featured mannequins coming to life.
Okay, the opening sequence with the items flying out of the cabinet was filmed with the cabinet nailed to the ceiling, and the crew were on top of the ceiling flinging items straight down. When it's shown in the film, it gives the illusion that the items are flying straight out. Someone mentioned that the plaster was already dough. Connor's parents in the film were actually played by David Schmoller's parents. Let's see. Robin Sherwood provided the heart-shaped sunglasses Eileen wears in the film because she thought they fitted Eileen's personality.
And she was right.
Yeah. Let's see. Schaller and Kobe are the first and middle names of the director's son. Schaller Kobe does not exist. I don't know what that means, but that was just in some kind of trivia.
It's in the beginning of the film. It's like a credit for Schaller Kobe as Davey.
Right.
To make people think there is a Davey in the film, but
right. Okay. Tanya Roberts insisted on running through the woods barefoot in one scene. She thought it'd help her better prepare a sense of pain and fear. The result was also that her feet ended up bloodied up. And let's see. John Van Ness did his own stunt when he jumps through the window. And,
yeah, I said that.
Yeah, okay. That's all I've got.
Deja vu.
Yeah, I'm very sick this morning, so I know. Loopy.
Okay, well, that's okay. No, thank you. Thank you, Joseph. Eric.
Okay. Director David Schmoller did his own stunt when he jumped out the window. No, he didn't.
Way to go, David.
Yeah. He had this was his first directorial film, but he had interned on the set of Capricorn 1 the year before, the Peter Hyams movie. Jocelyn Jones was the daughter of a famous actor called Henry Jones, who had been in Vertigo and The Bad Seed, and in later life he turned up in sort of early 90s films like Arachnophobia and Dick Tracy. There's a cameo by Albert Band in the movie. He's the father of Charles Band and the director of the wonderful Ghoulies 2, amongst others. He appears as Waxwork Grandfather, the one in the armchair that Eileen finds when she goes to investigate the house. Chuck Connors, as you mentioned, was not a trained actor. He actually was a professional baseball player who moved into acting in a kind of an O.J. Simpson style, without the controversy and the murder and shit. David Schmoller went on to make other notable films in, well, not huge hits or anything, but he made The Seduction, Catacombs, which was, I think, initially released as one of the sequels to The Curse. He made Puppet Master as well. Full Moon Pictures released a very controversial version of this film on Blu-ray last year in 2014, missing 5 minutes of footage, and the 88 Films UK release uses the same source materials, so it was also the cut version. So the one I was watching was, I think, the same one that you have, Joseph, the 1999, I assume, because it's billed as a 20th anniversary DVD, and it's the full 90-minute version. Ron Underwood was the assistant director of the film, and he went on to make a film that's a favourite of myself and Joseph's, and possibly the others, I'm not sure, Tremors, he made in 1990. He also went on to do City Slickers, Mighty Joe Young, which is guerrilla filmmaking as well. But he then, I think he shot himself in the foot by directing not a film I haven't seen, but I've no desire to see, the Eddie Murphy film, The Adventures of Pluto Nash. Ted Nicolau was the editor, and he went on to do a lot of stuff for Full Moon, Terror Vision, the Subspecies series, you know, dozens of Full Moon titles. And as I said, this was a Compass International Films release. Of course, they're most famously known for Halloween. They also did the Linda Blair film Hell Night. They also did the wonderful Linda Blair film Roller Boogie, one of my favourites. They ceased trading, though, in 1981 after Hell Night was released. And I think that's all I have. Oh, did anyone mention about that guy doing his own stunt when he fell out the window?
No.
I don't think, Justin, do you have that trivia?
Well, apparently, the guy who was in Hospital Massacre jumped for a window and did his own stunt.
Really?
That's awesome.
Wow.
That is awesome. But to be honest, I think you've covered pretty much everything we said, apart from, I think we talked about the producer wanted a Halloween-esque soundtrack, and that's what he was expecting, and we've already touched on that, and he was very disappointed that he didn't get that.
Here comes another plane.
Whoa.
What?
I got something coming through the teletype here. It says actor John Van Ness did his own stunts when he jumped out the window. So
breaking news.
I think This is going to become the new Alan Dale.
This is the new Alan Dale, yeah.
It's a new Alan Dale.
Well, actually, and wasn't another bit of trivia that John Van Ness's character was originally going to be played by Alan Dale?
Yeah, and he had the hair of the same wig as the girl who turned into the cockroach from
Before Dream Master. Yeah,
it's amazing. Just,
and they both were costumed by the same costumer from Cheerleader Camp. Yeah. There's your connection to that.
That's 6 degrees of separation, isn't it?
Yes. Justin, can I ask you a serious question?
Yes.
Did this get a cinema release in the UK?
I believe so. I know it was picked up for distribution, because in Variety it said it was picked up for distribution by Manson International Pictures. So I presume it did get a... I've never seen a cinema poster for it.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't find one either, so...
No, so I don't... But it got picked up for distribution. It may not have got it. But it certainly would have been... It was filmed in May 1978... So pre-Halloween, so it was a contemporary of Halloween. But when it came out, pretty much, it came out in May or March or May of 1979. So really hot on the heels of the success of Halloween. Certain films like that came out hot on the heels, like Silent Scream, made quite a lot of money off the back of Halloween because there was an audience, there was a hunger for films like Halloween. But Tourist Trap, for whatever reason, just didn't resonate with audiences, and was a commercial failure, which Irwin Yablans puts down to the score and the fact it was a PG-rated horror movie. So I think the only other thing that I've got, which I don't think we've mentioned, and nothing to do with Windows, but it was to do
I've been waiting for that.
No, it was to do with the nudity, because apparently the director wanted, in a skinny-dipping scene, and Tanya Roberts and the other girls should have been topless, but he was too bashful to ask them to get their breasts out until he got on set, and so because the contracts didn't stipulate nudity, they all told him where to stick it. So if they had
Woody got his boobs out, though, because he's got walking around with his open shirt in the opening scene.
Well, that wasn't
that was that rather nice, actually.
That was Woody, wasn't it? Yes. I think if they had got been a bit topless nudity, then the film would have got an R rating. And
yes,
perhaps
that
would have been more successful. Who knows? But the film got rediscovered over the years. Certainly, I read up on the drama about the 5 minutes missing of the footage from the Blu-ray. But also, there's certainly no love lost between the director and the producer, who they've had a long-running feud, which if you do any Google searching, you can find... That the director and the producer certainly don't like each other very much, and they keep on doing tit for tat things and little. So even 37 years later, there's still a lot of animosity between the two. So, Joseph, do we have what about the feedback on the?
We have
the Facebook page.
We have a few. I just posted this the other day, so we didn't get as much as, say, the Jason episode. But let's see. Bob Hartshorn writes in, says, "At last, Slauson's lost oasis is found by the hysteria continues. Yes, I share the love for Tourist Trap. That freaky scene near the start with the dummies in a room at the gas station sets the tone beautifully for this eerie, atmospheric, and often neglected mini-classic. And that scene where John Van Ness jumps out the window is just marvelous. Those cackling mannequins get me every time, as does Chuck Norris in that ghoulish fright wig. I think he meant Chuck Connors, but Chuck Norris, we'll go with that. And that ghoulish fright wig and ghastly face mask combo. Again, the scene where John Van Ness jumps out the window. Sorry. Anyway, my favorite scene, spoiler, is where an unknowing Jerry discovers he has been turned into one of Mr. Slauson's mannequins. It's almost as if the film has been gatecrashed by Philip K. Dick's novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And that final shot of the Jeep on the highway is awesome. I also have to confess to having a bit of a soft spot for the kind of remake that was 2005's House of Wax. I think it's very similar. Anyone agree? Looking forward to your views, gentlemen. Be kind. That's from Bob Hartshorn.
Thank you, Bob.
I like 2005 House of Wax. From what I remember, I haven't seen it in a while, but I did remember enjoying it.
It was entertaining.
Yeah.
So one of your friends, Justin, is there one of the Supernatural boys in it? No?
Yeah, Jared Padalecki. He's in it.
There you go.
And Paris Hilton.
And Paris Hilton, yeah.
Yeah.
Andrew Rooney writes, really great film, genuinely creepy too. Has that sweaty late 70s, early 80s grindhouse aesthetic. One of those underrated gems that is great to share with the many horror lovers who might have missed it. That's Andrew Rooney.
Thank you, Andrew.
Justin White says, I absolutely love Tourist Trap. It's a really underrated gem, I think. Genuinely creepy with characters that stick around long enough so that you actually care about them getting killed. The suffocation scene is particularly disturbing, and I definitely would agree with that. That's from Justin White.
Thank you, Justin.
Mike Alishan writes, love, love, love Tourist Trap. And I love whoever picked this film, Christian Comer. Let's see. Rushing to my region-free player right after work and popping in my 88 Films Blu-ray copy. That's from Mike Alishan.
Short of 5 minutes.
Ben Schur writes in, the killer looks like the love child of Mitt Romney and Patsy Cline. Good comparison there. Tanya Roberts gives her best performance. I love this movie. It's creepy and beautiful. It's one of those movies that really puts you smack in the middle of insanity. That's Ben Schur.
Thank you, Ben.
Miles Hamer writes, the absence of Alan Dale leaves it lacking Alan Dale.
Miles Hamer. That is true.
That is true, Miles. Yes. Good observation. Okay.
Stefan Mittender writes, underrated.
Short and sweet. Thank you, Stefan.
Amanda Reyes says, I saw this in 35 at a festival last year. 35 millimeter, by the way. Still creepy. It's a total fever dream movie with tons of weird, surreal visuals that only amp up the suspense. I agree. It's completely underrated. That's from Amanda Reyes.
Well, thank you, Amanda.
And finally, Vaughn Colmeyer. I guess that's his last name. I'm sick, so sorry if I'm pronouncing your names wrong. I think this film stinks. Besides one good kill and an insane performance from Chuck Connors, the film falls flat for me. I've seen it twice, and both times it was a dud. That's from Vaughn Colmeyer. I guess that's his name. Sorry if I'm
controversial.
Yeah,
I'm sick this morning. And that's it for the listener feedback.
Okay, right. Well, thanks for everyone for feeding back. We'll come back in a minute with a bit more feedback. Oh, and a dog.
With a bit more dog shaking.
Dogs and cats. That's the name of this podcast. But we'll be back in a
minute. You whore!
No, that was you. Eric, that's a real time you whore, isn't it? Trying to blame
me. Real time you whore. Live in concert.
Yeah.
What was that in reference to? That sound clip.
I think I was talking about I think Naked Werewolf Woman. You know that it's a 70s Italian film, and it's basically one of those possessed Italian lady movies that I love who shout obscenities.
Oh yes, I've been wanting to watch that. I totally forgot about that one. I need to watch that one because I think that'd be fun.
She calls
especially if I'm medicated. I have a question about you guys about the ending to this film.
Okay.
Now, Molly drives away with mannequins in her car. Mm. Is she crazy and she thinks that her friends are still alive? Does she just want to decorate her house with her friends? Or is she taking them to a witch doctor to turn them human again?
I think she just wanted to use the carpool lane.
Could be.
I think she's just crazy, isn't she?
I think she's just kind of batty. Yeah.
That was my joke of the week, by the way.
Oh, yes.
It's better than mine.
We're going to come
back.
So
you guys think she's nuts?
Yeah, I think she's nuts. Yeah.
Like Dana Kimmel nuts in Friday 13th Part 3?
Totally, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Completely
batshit crazy.
Because I just wonder, like, where is she going when she pulls up, like, outside her building and everybody sees all these mannequins? Is she going to be like, oh, this is Woody. This is Eileen.
I thought what would be a good idea overall, out of 10, what would each of you give Tourist Trap if you're honest?
I would probably
give
it
7, I'd say.
I'd give it a 7.
7.
I'm going to say I would give it an 8.
I'd give it a 6.
Okay.
So we're all above 5.
Yeah. What about Woody? Would any of you give him 1?
I'd give him a 7.5.
Or inch.
Yeah.
Oh, Joseph, really? Well, what a revelation.
Sorry. I'm on medicine this morning. Not Nathan's medicine, but
legal
medicine, Nathan.
Yeah.
I hope you end up in jail.
It's legal in some areas.
Well, not here, you lawbreaker.
Well, it's only because our lawmakers are morons. So
political.
Wow.
Justin's the arty one who watches foreign movies, and you're the political one, Nathan.
Justin, sits with his glass of, you know, Chardonnay, listening to Grant or whatever it is on his stenograph player or whatever that thing's called.
Hey?
Listen to John Grant on his
John Grant. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But that's culture for you, isn't it?
Culture schmulture. Mm. I listen to Culture Club.
Yeah, that's not culture.
Who's John Grant? Is he like Beethoven or Mozart?
No.
Is that classical stuff?
It's not classical. No. It's got 80s. Oh. It's quite 80s tinged, actually.
This is really scintillating. Eric, do you have your joke of the week?
I do.
Well, let's wait. Can we just wait? Because I really need to go to the toilet.
You just revealed that live on the air.
Yeah. To do a poo-poo.
No, it's 1. I'm just dying for a piss. So we're going to pause here, and we're going to be back with some feedback shortly. So hold it in.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, yes, and welcome back. And we got some, well, before we do feedback, Eric, do you want to regale us with your joke of the week?
Yeah, but it was a real thrown together the last minute effort. It was actually composed in the middle of recording the podcast. So
you gotta play the jingle.
You gotta play the jingle.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh no, it's not that one. Hold on.
Nathan said, before you play that, Nathan said earlier that this episode has a nightmarish feel.
It does.
Okay. Did you know the producer's father on Tourist Trap was more or less banished from the set? In the end, he was all but banned. Albert Banned.
I thought his name was Charles Band.
That's the producer. This is his father, is Albert Band. See, if you don't understand my jokes, that's why you're not laughing.
Oh,
it's a good thing I'm on medication
right now. Too sophisticated for you. Justin isn't even laughing. He doesn't even get it. He considers himself highbrow, and he still can't get my sophisticated jokes.
Oh, Eric. Let's take a moment to reflect. Anyway, let's moving on. So, feedback. Thank you, Eric. Anyway,
I have one.
It's always good that you're trying.
I am trying.
In more ways than one.
Hey!
Joseph, have you got some feedback for us?
Yeah, I got a short one here. Short feedback, anyway. It says, "Hey guys, I've recently discovered your podcast and love it. After listening to the Alien episode, it got me thinking about one of my old favorites of childhood, Without Warning from 1980. Would you guys even consider doing an episode on that? And I think I'd speak for us all when I say, yeah, we probably would. You could say it has elements of a slasher film, couldn't you? I'd say yes. Anyway, it'd be great to hear you guys bat that one around, and I've always wanted to know more about that movie with background, etc. In any event, keep up the good work. Pat." That's from Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Yes, I love Without Warning.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we could fit that in, couldn't we?
Yeah, well, we've covered Predator, we've covered Alien, and this is kind of a mishmash of the two.
So. We've covered Sightseer, so yeah, we can fit
yes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I've got two. Eric, you've got two, haven't you?
I do have two.
I have one.
You have one. Well, Eric, do you want to go first?
And yes. Then I'll go and then... Okay. This is from Carrie, and she says, "Dear Hysteria crew, I discovered your podcast this summer, and I'm completely addicted. I'm following each new episode and have been catching up on as many old episodes as I can. Bless you guys for creating a horror show that is so listenable. I'm sure you have plenty of female fans like me, but I don't hear much from the ladies during the feedback portion of the show, so I thought I'd jump in here. First, I wanted to add my two cents on the film from the last episode, Jason Takes Manhattan. Everything you said about the movie's flaws are true, but part 8 does provide one very important moment in the series. It confirms that Jason is self-aware. Jason sees the hockey billboard and understands that it looks like him. He turns away, either in confusion or annoyance. He confronts the punk kids by lifting up his mask so they can see what's underneath, because he knows what is there. So he's no robot. He's aware that he's a freak and can frighten people even without a weapon in his hand. You are a missus. It harkens back to the earliest fact we knew about Jason, which is that he was a friendless, weird-looking boy. Is this Jason or Justin he's talking about?
Oh, Eric. She's
It harkens back to the earliest fact we knew about Jason, which is that he was a friendless, weird-looking boy who nobody but his mother could love. It definitely is Justin. I find that a more satisfying version of Jason rather than the Terminator-like version we tended to see after part two. Before I go, let me recommend two films for future podcasts, and I think Carrie here has got some kind of ESP. First, you've got to dedicate an episode to Tourist Trap. Dun, dun, this classic-era slasher delivers in every way. Lost teenagers getting trapped in unknown territory, being picked off one by one by a creep with a seriously messed-up psyche. The film has possibly the most disturbing yet gore-free death scene in all of slasher history. Carrie doesn't specify which scene she means.
It's probably the dough.
Must be the dough. The goo scene. On the face, yeah. Plus, in 1981, well, this is actually 1979, Tanya Roberts was the leggiest, most gorgeous creature on planet Earth. I don't care who you are. I'm a straight married woman, and I was practically licking the screen when Tanya was on it. Second, I recommend Grizzly, 1976, as an alterna slasher. Not an alternate slasher. Carrie has made up a new word called alternate slasher, which I think is quite good. A ravenous bear that can behead man or beast with one swipe terrorizes a national park, and only our man, Christopher George, can stop him. The movie is solid gold, if you can look past the fact that none of the actors is in the same county as the damn bear, much less the same frame of film. And one victim is rather obviously being attacked by an embarrassed stuntman in a bear rug. At the very least, it takes place entirely in the woods, so if you close your eyes, it's basically Friday the 13th Part 2, which is true, I suppose. I hope this podcast continues forever. Much love from New York City, the real one, not the Vancouver one, Carrie S.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie, for that.
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you. Thanks. You for
I just want to say they're licking the screen with Tanya Roberts was, oh, baby.
Are you a Tanya Roberts enthusiast, Joseph?
Yes. I am. Eric.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Very Barry White here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen Grizzly. The sexy slither of a snake. Oh, baby.
I've seen Grizzly, but it wouldn't be in my top five favorite bear movies I've seen. Oh.
Well, we know which, yes. But, yeah, we won't go there, Eric, will we?
Has anyone seen Tourist Trap? It's the other film that Carrie was mentioning.
No. Is that the film where John Van Ness does his own stunt out the window?
I think it is.
I think so. I think so, yeah. I need to rewatch it, I think, yeah.
We have in jokes.
We do.
We do.
But thank you, Carrie. I've got another one from.
Sorry, that's my ice cubes.
Is it?
Yeah.
What are you drinking? Vodka and
I'm drinking Coke. Just a Coke.
Is it just a Coke? Really?
Well, it's Coke Zero with ice cubes in it.
Blimey.
Sorry, and I'm trying to be really discreet, but they're making that noise.
Okay. Well, here we've got...
I'm thirsty.
Okay. Here's another bit of feedback. It says, "Hi, guys. This is Aaron, first-time writer, long-time listener. First, I want to say how much I love your show and try to tell my horror friends to tune in every chance I can. Recently, I attended Portland, Oregon's first annual horror convention, and although small, I had the pleasure of meeting Adrian King, Barbara Steele, and a few other familiar faces. I also competed in a 72-hour horror movie competition. This is where you have 3 days to write, film, and edit a 7-minute movie. Do any of you guys have any of these kind of competitions where you live? If so, would you compete?" Is that something? Myself and... Eric probably don't, but
there's like websites online where they want, like, you know, make a film that's like 2 minutes long or 30 seconds long, but in the area, no.
I mean, I've made a lot of 7 and 8 minute films, but they've never been submitted to festivals or anything.
Oh, we've seen some of those, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. So you have suffered through them. Although I think you were a fan of the shoe rack. Oh, so you're finally giving her top billing over the shoe rack?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, she deserves it.
The Hazel Tankersley box set.
Exactly.
6 stunning films for $19.99.
And they could come with a little figurine of Hazel as well.
Yeah.
Well, they should. They
with
should.
Red Queen and Kill 7 Times. And exactly. Evelyn came out of the grave, a little figurine of Hazel and with the shoe rack.
Yes. Oh, I'd buy that.
Who wouldn't?
Of course.
Aaron goes on to say, "With this said, and not to be too creepy, I totally had a dream that you guys came to make a cameo in one of our films. Well, it would be a pleasure. Even though I have no clue what you look like, thank you for all your hard work and keep it going. I've attached our most recent film, so if you don't mind sparing 7 minutes, I'd love to know what you think. Your friend, Aaron Lyon." I shall share that link with you so you can watch that. And she said, "P.S. We made all original music and practice effects. Hope you enjoy." So thank you, Erin. We shall watch that shortly. Nathan, do you want to read yours out?
Yes. It says, "Hello, gents. Well, I just saw Night Train to Terror and then Greta, a.k.a. Death Wish Club. Thank you, Meep. Eric's Inga-isms are only matched by his Greta-ishness. If possible, and if you can remember, can you point me in the direction of the episode where y'all discuss it? Cheers, Andrew Rooney."
Night Train to Terror or Bloody Moon? Night Train to Terror we often discussed. We did a commentary on the Blu-ray for Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah.
Bloody Moon, I don't know, it's back early episodes, which is where the Inga thing comes from.
You kind of say that as if you're not part of it, Eric.
Eric is affectionately referred to as Inga.
Mm. Yes. I imagine Inga will be getting an airing on the next episode.
Yes, possibly. Depends on how Cheaterson's doing.
Mm. Well, actually, I do have a little bit of feedback, but it's I'm paraphrasing here because I was on a podcast with Amanda Reyes. Her made-for-TV Mayhem podcast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Her co-host on there, Daniel Budnick, he mentioned Eric, and he mentioned that one of his favorite moments out of any of our shows was the quiz where we tried to convince Eric that Mrs. Voorhees' first name was Veronica, and Eric had a little meltdown over it.
Well, yeah.
Because he said, "Why does it say Pamela Voorhees in the final chapter?"
Well, why did it? If you were good. And then I twigged that you'd all been in cahoots behind my back.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay, well.
Very mean trick.
Yeah, well, we'll see what comes for the next show. But I've got... Yes. You got another one, Eric?
I do, yeah. I have one here from Craig. He says, "Hey, guys, loving the show. But I do miss the top threes, so I thought I'd suggest a countdown I think would be interesting. The basic idea would be to have everyone choose their favorite slasher sequel for each number from 1 to 10. So, for example, Halloween, Friday the 13th Part 2, Leatherface, Bride of Chucky, etc. For franchises with less than 10 films, the remakes could stand for that sequel. So, to give an idea, everyone's favourite Rob Zombie's Halloween would count as for the 8th in the series. Actually, I think it would be the 9th, would it not? Although, in terms of slasher movies, it would be the 8th because Halloween 3 doesn't count. This is me adding in, ad-libbing. And it would obviously take much longer to get through than the top threes, but maybe you could spread the countdown across 3 weeks. Keep doing what you're doing. That's Craig, who runs the website horrorjapan.com.
Okay.
I think our top three is pretty much dead.
Yeah, because we...
That's a shame.
Oh, well, it's just that we ended up repeating ourselves a bit, didn't we?
Yeah.
I quite like Craig's. Will be fabulous quizzes coming up soon.
Yes. I do like Craig's idea. So it's something we could consider for the new year. But we'll have a think about that. So, thank you, Craig. And I've got one more here. It says, "Hey guys, I listened to your Friday 13th Part 8 episode. Joseph had a good observation that the way they get killed is something from their lives: guitar, mirror, etc. That was probably copied from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies that were doing the same thing in their sequel, starting with Part 3. Also, there was mention of Jason's teleporting, which I always thought of as Flash's fast-running superpower. Obviously a case of bad staging and editing, something that never gets mentioned in Part 8 discussions, the relationship between the captain and his son. One of the most heartfelt moments of any Friday movie is when the captain advises his first mate not to push his son like the captain did to his son. That moment is quickly squashed when Jason comes in and kills them both. For Eric's joke of the week, I'm seeing a pattern. The punchline is always words that sound like someone's name.
Yeah, I know, but I'm running out of ideas. It's like the top threes.
My prediction for his punchline for Friday 13th Part 8 was, he said, "I want more cheese, get it, Voorhees, more cheese." That's from Scott Plissken.
I did do a Voorhees, or something to do with cheese joke in a previous Friday the 13th.
You said podcast. Jason Voorhees.
Four cheese pizza, yeah, or something like that.
Four cheese.
Yeah, but it's difficult. I'm actually thinking because I had real difficulty with today's joke of the week. Yeah. I was thinking of retiring the joke of the week.
Never, Eric. That can't.
But I'm struggling. I mean, every week it is. I mean, I agree. Every week it is. It's like the punchline is something that sounds like somebody's name associated with the film.
Well, what we could do is we could all take a
rotating joke.
Joke of the week. Yeah. How about that? I'll do the next one.
Okay.
This could actually be interesting because if we do a rotating one and because I'm awful at this, so mine are going to be, it's going to be interesting.
Also, what's going to be particularly interesting is I've got control of soundboard and the sound clips, just saying. So...
That means
so obviously you're
his joke, yeah.
You just tell his joke, it's gonna be crowds cheering and stuff.
Yeah.
I know.
Or a bunch of a laugh track.
It depends. Yeah. You know, who knows? Who knows what's gonna happen? But do we have any more feedback or is that us spent?
That's it. Yeah.
That's it for this week.
Okay. Well, do we want to tell our faithful listeners what we're gonna be doing next time?
Yes. Our next episode is a famed Christmas episode. It's also a listener pick. Honestly, I don't remember who picked it.
Oh, I think it might be. I think you might find it's John Jordan.
John Jordan. Okay, thank you, Eric. I have my computer closed because I'm getting ready to go to work. But John Jordan picked Silent Night, Bloody Night. So we're going to do that as a listener pick and as a Christmas episode. So we will be releasing that right around Christmas. We will also have a special...
jingle bells, jingle all the way.
A Christmas slasher quiz in which Eric will lose.
Silent Night.
I could use a little bit of Silent Night right now.
Absolutely.
That's what's coming up next. So, yeah, there you go.
Excellent. Well, thank you for listening to our Tourist Trap episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. It's turned into a very long one.
Nathan said it's very nightmarish, and I would agree, especially with me being sick and unable to talk at all.
And me being delirious. I feel like Molly at the end of Tourist Trap right now.
Yeah.
And Argento saying what everyone was thinking.
I just hope
Oh, you whore.
You whore!
Yes.
I just hope my sexy phlegm voice has not turned away so many people. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Well, say good night.
My sticky shoes.
My sticky shoes.
Eric, give me a pint of whiskey.
Justin doesn't get these Friends references. He's too cool for Friends.
Yeah.
Is that right,
Justin?
Got
any Jean Cocteau or you know, any Vin Vendors or something references?
So pretentious.
That hurt.
What did you do?
I hit my tooth with the iPad.
I hate when that happens. Why is the iPad in your mouth?
Yeah, why are you trying to eat it?
It's in my hand and it fell forward and hit me in the teeth.
You sound like you're crying now.
Yeah. It's funny, actually. Sorry.
Oh, dear. This is going to go down in the annals of history.
The annals?
Yes. Yeah. So, we'll
be better prepared on our next episode, I promise.
Yeah, that's what we always say.
And it never happens. But thank you for listening and sticking with us. And, we'll see you next time. So we'll play out some more of Pino de Grigio, whatever his name is music for Tourist Trap. So say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
It'll be quick, but it won't be easy.
No.
You'll die of fright.
Look at the size of that hole.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
You on drugs?
No. Not currently.
Not currently. Not yet. We might hear you spark up.
I'm hoping you fellows can help me solve a mystery about Tourist Trap that I've never figured out.
Oh, like Nancy Drew.
Why?
My God, they're so lifelike.
Unless he's a whore and he just goes to work in the bed. Are you saying that Joseph's a whore? That's what you're saying, Nathan. I'm going to tell him.
It is.
This is going at the end of the show.
Are you recording this?
Of course.
Sometimes I like to speak in a British accent.
Yeah.
We don't say
sounds
bomb.
Classy.
This is actually just a ruse to get Eric into my bed.
Ew. I mean,
I feel like this episode has a nightmarish quality.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Zargento's are still in your face.
No, I've chucked him out.